Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, February 28th, 2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it'll make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can, what else can you do? You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart? Let me know. Let me know. Let me know. R.I.P. Aaliyah. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 158 of the show. I have a very, very special return guest, Jenna Corrado of NBC Sports. She wasn't on NBC when we last talked, which was almost 3 years ago. So she's rising up the ranks, and I'm gonna share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I just finished watching The Martian on demand because I wanted to see. I think the only Best Actor movie I haven't seen is Trumbo. And as much as I love Bryan Cranston, I don't think he's going to win. I don't think Matt Damon's going to win. I think this is Leo's year. And I'm seeing all these. I'll get to The Martian in a bit. Just calm down, you guys. This is Leo's year. I'm seeing all these hot takes on why he shouldn't win. And like the guy wasn't deserving of an Oscar years before. Like even you could go, he didn't get nominated for Django, which would have been a Best Supporting, but he didn't get nominated for, he didn't win for Wolf of Wall Street, which he should have won. So, you know, this is his year, and the Oscars has a history of rewarding actors for previous performances. And I thought The Revenant was good. It's just a good movie. You killed this guy's son, and he's going to get revenge, and he hallucinates while he's in the snow. And, you know, it's shot well. What are you going to do? What more do you want? So I think it's his year. I think it's Brie Larson's year. Anyway, if Brie Larson doesn't win, I'm going to be upset. I am going to be so upset. So I watched The Martian. I said, let me see. And let me see this movie, see what's going on. Everybody told me it was a good movie. It's a good movie. I'm going to just say that. I don't know that I gave a shit that Matt Damon was stuck on Mars, growing potatoes and listening to disco music. I don't know if it was just what, there were some moments that were compelling. I was like, all right. And I was just like, okay, all right. You know? And then part of me was like hating on Matt Damon a little bit because of the stuff that he said during Project Greenlight when he was talking about diversity. Oh, diversity should only happen in front of the camera, not behind. I mean, you know. So he white-splained to that black producer. That black movie producer, and I was just like, ugh, that just left a bad taste in my mouth. So I just kind of look at him now with a side eye, just like, ugh, all right, man. And he's a good actor, but I don't know. That's kind of taken away from what I'm supposed to be feeling when I'm watching a movie. And I was just like, all right. And then, so you had Chiwetel. It had a good cast. Jessica Chastain, Jeff Daniels, Donald Glover's in it. Kate Mara, a lot of talented people that I like seeing. Shout out to Donald Glover. He pretty much was the character that saved the day. you know, hashtag black actors. I'm all for my black actors getting this bread, but she would tell Ejiofor's character his last name was Kapoor. And I'm like, yo, they couldn't call Cal Penn, or Aziz didn't want to do it. So I guess Aziz didn't want to be in the movie, or he was busy. So, you know, he wasn't in it. But like, damn, man, Kapoor, you know. And somebody I tweeted that, and somebody was like, oh, well, he mentions that he was half black and Indian. Yeah, just like Emma Stone said she was part Asian or quarter Asian in Aloha, that people had a shit fit over, you know. So I don't know. It was just kind of like, all right, Kapoor, okay, buddy. All right. So, yeah, man, it was all right. It's definitely, it's an entertaining movie. It's sci-fi. It's fine. Steph Curry, man, 46 points. That's a hell of a segue. Just no transition at all. No heads up. I have NBA TV on mute, and Steph Curry, man, he's unreal. 46 points, game-winning shot from 35 feet. He barely crossed half court and just threw it up in overtime and just won the game. And it outshadowed Klay Thompson having 32 points. Like, Steph Curry's, he's the best player. He's the best player in the NBA right now. And this is coming from a quasi-LeBron stan. So, you know, take it from me, folks. I know what I'm talking about. I follow the NBA. I follow a couple Instagram accounts, but I think it's the main NBA Instagram account. And there's this video of Steph Curry in slow motion hitting one of his 12 threes, I think. And he crossed up Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is 7 feet tall. And they're trying to say, oh, he's like 6'10". No, he's 7 feet tall. Steph Curry crossed him up, got space, and just shot a three over Kevin Durant. He's insane. I don't know where Kevin's going, but if he goes to Golden State, then they should just cancel the season, because that would just be so unfair. And my dad doesn't want to believe that Golden State would let Harrison Barnes go. They'll let his ass go in a minute. They'll let Klay Thompson go. But, you know, whatever. So they're great. I think Anderson Varejao got traded, or did he get released or traded? He got released by the Cavs, and Golden State picked him up. Anderson Varejao is going to win a championship this year. They look unstoppable, but Golden State looks unstoppable, but they could be beat. Like they showed they could be beat in the finals. They were just outmanned. Okay, whatever. All right, I'm going back into the past. So I had a good week this past week doing some shows. Did a show at Levity Live in West Nyack. That was an interesting show because it was a very light crowd, like less than 20 people in a place that seats 400 people. And I thought it was going to be like pulling teeth, but I just dug in my heels and just delivered what I would say would have been a tour de force performance. No, I got through it. Like I did some stuff, like I found some stuff that I could use later, like that I could use. Like it's one of those sets where you just kind of, oh, okay, I didn't bomb, I didn't destroy, but I did my job. That's one of those, I did my job, damn it. Like I got through it. I learned about myself, and I came out unscathed, you know. My self-esteem didn't take a huge hit. So I got through it, and that was cool. So that was a good experience. And then I did a show at UCB East called Lasers in the Jungle. One of my favorite shows to do in the city. It's just a fun show. You do like less about a little like maybe 8 to 10, and you get up in front of a good crowd and get to test your material. So that was fun. So shout out to Anya Garrett, who booked the show. Katina Carrero, Sean Crespo, and Dan Wilbur. There's a fun show every Thursday night at 7:30. Good way to start your weekend out, folks. And last night, I got added onto a show, the show called Shtick, A Pole in It, which is run by Joanna Ross and Dan Goodman, two comedians, a comedy couple, if you will. And it's a monthly show at this place called Drom in the East Village. And it's a show where they have stand-up and pole dancing. So they open up the show. Like, Joanna opens up the show. She MCs. And they bring up a pole dancer. They dance for about 5 minutes, very sexily and very sensual. Is sexily a word? I don't think sexily is a word. But it's very sensual, and these girls are hot. And then I went up after the first pole dancer. And it was a packed crowd. It was a sold out crowd. It was a hot crowd. They were a little rambunctious because I found out after the show that a lot of these girls have a following. They have friends and they come just to see the dancers. So I'm just like, oh shit, this could be a fucking nightmare. And, I go up there and I just like riff about like how, you know, these girls are hot. And then you have to see me do stand up, and talk about whatever the hell I'm talking about. And I had a good time. I had to control them. I had to tell them to shut the fuck up once. And I just kind of like, I teased them a little bit and they were into it and it was fun. I actually like got in some new jokes that I can like that little kernels that I was, thinking about. I gave them a little A, and then slid them in some new stuff, and it went well in front of a diverse, interesting, weird crowd. So that gave me a good gauge of what I've been working on and new stuff that I want to add. But I had a really good time. I was apprehensive at first because of the way that Dan was telling me how weird the show can get sometimes, but it's a fantastic show. So it's a monthly show, and I had a great time. Drom is like this interesting venue because it's in the East Village, and it's below some kind of I think maybe an Indian restaurant. I'm not 100% sure, but you go downstairs and you think it's going to be like a cave, but you go downstairs and you walk in, and then you walk to the back of the room. It's like a high ceiling and it's like a big stage, and it's a really cool venue. Like that's New York City for you. Like it's just a really interesting, neat kind of, vibe to that place. And, hung out a little bit after. This one guy came up to me. I got a lot of nice feedback. I sound like a fucking dick, like a douche when I'm like, hey, I got some nice feedback. But you know, after you do a show, people say, oh, good job. Or they don't say shit to you. If they didn't like the show, they don't say anything to you. But, some people saying, oh, good job. Really nice. Thanks. You know, really good time or whatever. And one black dude came up to me. He's like, man, he's like, good job, man. Like, I didn't know at first, man. I didn't know what to expect. You know, people trying to be funny and it could just go crazy. And da, 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 da. I was like, thanks, guy. Thanks, man. I was like, he's like, no, I ain't mean it. Like, you know, I was like, thanks, buddy. But it was kind of weird. I guess sometimes people just don't know what to say. So whatever. I get that. I'm going to give you some dates. I have some dates coming up, tonight, whenever you get that, I don't know when this thing is going to upload, but tonight, February 28th, I will be at UCB East again. I'll be there doing, If You Build It, which is a fun show, really terrific show. That's at 8:00 PM, March 4th. I'll be at the Comedy Shop in Mount Arlington, New Jersey at 8:30. Looking forward to that because I get to go to Fuddruckers. How fat is that? How fat is that of me? Like, I'm living my dream. I'm doing a show on a Friday night, but it's like, oh, I get to go to Fuddruckers. That's like a little treat because, all right. So I'm going to be at Videology on March 10th in Brooklyn, New York. That's going to be a fun show. It's a show called Low Standards where they have comics do a set. And then they talk about a movie that's like their guilty pleasure. So I'm trying to decide which movie I'm going to pick. But it's kind of hard because I don't really give a shit what if people think it's a guilty pleasure. I just think it's a pleasure because I like the movie. So maybe a movie that's like unheralded or people or look down on, like that's the movie that you pick and you talk about it and maybe talk about a couple scenes. So I just got booked on that. So I'm excited to do that. That's at Videology in Williamsburg at 9 o'clock p.m. March 11th. Really excited about this show. I'm going to be on the High Mud Comedy Festival in North Adams, Massachusetts. That's in the Berkshires at 7 o'clock p.m. That's going to be fun. And I think like that's going to be, I think that's kicking off the festival. It's only 2 days. And it's going to, Tig Notaro is going to be there. Sean Patton, Dave Hill. And it's, and Tom Attila Lewis is who you have heard about on the show before, is a dude that's one of the, running the show is going to be, all right, I'm telling you too much. It's going to be fun. I'm excited. If you live in the Berkshires, come to that show. It's going to be a good time. And I think there's going to be a couple of, satellite shows going on in the area. So hopefully that happens. And, let's give you a couple more dates. March 17th, I'll be headlining, the 2 Laugh Minimum show at Steel Stacks at the Arts Quest Center in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania at 8 o'clock PM. And then on March 25th, I'll also be headlining, what the hell is the name of that show? I'm going to be headlining at Characters, in Sloatsburg, New York at 9 o'clock. Slaughter Stand Up, the Slaughter Stand Up series run by Eric Albert and Dan DiMarino. Eric Albert and his crew. I'm excited about that. I haven't done that show in over a year, maybe a couple years. So I'm excited about that. They've got good pizza there. So those are some dates. And so if you are interested, check out the website, chrislambert.com. And now let's get to Jenna Corrado, because I've blabbed enough. Really excited to have her back on the show. Jenna, I knew her. For those of you that aren't familiar with this show or you're new to the show, I met Jenna when I first moved here, maybe like a year within the first couple years that I moved here. We did a show together, community theater together. She's one of the people that basically pushed me in the direction of stand up by like telling me about improv at UCB. And that like kind of started my evolution into being a stand up and a guy that's talking to you on this podcast. And, she has a very interesting path to getting to where she is and to where she's the career path she's chosen. And it was just really great to sit down and talk to her. And I got to give this is the third conversation that I've had with someone in a loud restaurant. So this is I'm giving you my spiel. Look, man, this is not high tech. I'm not going to say it's like it ain't. You know what? It's a good. This is a good ass podcast, man. And it's a good show. And I'm happy for I've been doing this almost 3 years, and I'm happy that it's slowly building, and I have a fun time doing it. So I'm going to keep doing it until it's not fun anymore. So this is the situation when this is a mobile show. I'm just like giving a TED talk on why this podcast is going to be this episode is going to be loud. We went to we did this at Houston's last week. And it almost seemed like as soon as I turned it on, it was just like loud as hell. I think a baby started crying at one point. But this is a very good conversation, and you will be able to hear us. And it's gonna be great. It's gonna be great. Sound like Donald Trump. And it was just a great conversation, and I had a blast talking to Jenna. And she's climbing up the ladder. And you can say, oh, I heard about her when she was on this Unknown Comedians podcast. So here's my conversation with the very lovely and talented Jenna Corrado.
It just seems like everything got louder when I turned this thing on, because this will be the third episode where I'm talking to somebody, and there's just like a loud, just this huge cacophony of sounds happening. I feel like a baby started crying when I pulled this thing out.
Have you ever talked to anyone who's eating focaccia bread during an interview?
No, you are the first, Jenna. You are. You have christened the show with focaccia bread eating.
Which I ate after my entree.
I'm not mad at you. It was just, you just had a salad, though.
It was a bold move. Tuna. Ahi tuna salad.
Yeah, but it's not, that's not that, okay. It's not really, it's not super heavy, though, is
no,
it?
No.
Yeah. So we're at Houston's, and this place brings back memories to
the
me.
The heart of Bergen County.
In the heart of historic Hackensack, New Jersey. A city in motion. They call Hackensack a city in motion.
The Renaissance.
It's really... I mean, I like living here. I like this area, and I love Bergen County, but it is what it is. It's just... It's a suburb of New York that has these antiquated blue laws where everything closes on Sunday. I can respect that, but that just makes now... That just makes where we're at kind of like a shit show, because... Everybody and their families are here on a Sunday. Like, we try to go to Cheesecake Factory. I didn't even, did we even check how long the wait would be?
No, we didn't. We just walked out.
I'm like, we're not eating Cheesecake Factory today.
This is crazy. Let's get out of here.
It's intense. Like, babies on strollers, like babies, like people are just camped out like it's, like their flight got delayed and everybody's at Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah. The baby part, that's the sign where you know you have to go somewhere else, especially if you want to have a decent conversation.
Yeah. So, we're doing it. We made it happen. I think this was a good choice. I just have memories about Houston. I was telling you before, I went out with this girl, and we went to Houston's, and that was the last date that we went on.
And when was that?
This was 2009.
What went right and what went wrong?
What went right? I mean, we met in improv class. I think I might have mentioned her a few times. She's in Austin now. She doesn't care. She's like with some hot guy or some shit. I don't even know. But she's living her life.
Yeah.
And I think she liked one of my Facebook posts recently. So I was like, you know how you just kind of... With somebody you don't talk to for a long time.
Where did that come from?
Where did what come
from? She must have been thinking about you.
Don't do this to me. don't do this to me.
Isn't that what that means, though?
Maybe.
Maybe she accidentally hit like.
Maybe she accidentally hit
but
hit
she's
it.
Still thinking about you.
Maybe.
She's still looking at your picture.
This one girl that I used to date in Chicago, we kind of, I don't know what you call it, but we were really cool in Chicago. And then she's married now. So she's, you know, she's living her life.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, she pulled up an old Facebook memory and, like, tagged me in it. And it was like, remember this? And I was like, ugh. Your last name is new. Your last name is different from when I knew you before. So I'm going to respect that bond that you have with that guy that's not me.
The Facebook memories are the death of me. Like, thank you, Facebook. I was trying to forget that part
of
my life.
Yeah.
And I don't even talk to like 65% of the people I have memories with.
Sure.
A, I don't recognize their names because everyone's married on their second kid and
yeah.
And it takes me a couple seconds to put two and two together, but yeah, Facebook memories.
I feel the same way. It's like, I don't know if I want to relive that. A lot of posts that didn't get liked.
Yeah.
I was trying stuff out.
Because that's the true assessment of our success and failures.
It's true. The likes. Like, you got to get those likes up.
It's really demoralizing if you do not get the likes you think you're going to get.
Yeah. Or you ask a question and nobody answers it. Like, nobody answers it on Twitter. It's just like, wow, I'm not going to get that answer that I'm looking for. So maybe that answer is within me.
Does it make you feel... Does it give you any validation if you do get a like or get some kind of response, or does it make you feel less of who you are if you don't get that response?
I don't think it makes me feel less, but it is nice to know that, like, that there's, it's virtual currency. It's right. Definitely a form of currency where, sure. Oh, okay, that idea that I had was not as crazy as I thought it was, but I usually stick to, on Facebook, I'll post if I'm seeing, if I see a movie. I try to keep it light. Like, I'll make a joke about something. Nothing too serious. I'll just save it for stand-up.
Yeah.
But I try not to get too intense. Unless it's just black quarterbacks. That's my, that's the only thing.
You
that
are
I'm,
very passionate about
I'm
that.
I'm very right-wing, non-liberal about black quarterbacks. When Cam Newton lost.
Okay, we have to talk about
yeah,
that.
Let's talk yeah. about it.
Okay, we have to talk about his whole reaction.
Okay.
At the end.
Well, first of all, I don't know that there's ever been a press conference where the other team was in the same room.
Oh my goodness.
And I know that had to hurt, but he did answer all the questions that you, we didn't play well, threw some bad passes.
Yeah.
We didn't do this, we didn't do that. And then he just heard, who was the guy? I forget who it was. It wasn't Talib. But he heard the guy like, can you throw the ball? We're gonna test you. And I was like, ugh, I don't know if I could have stayed. But yeah. I probably wouldn't have done that, but I respect him for doing it his way. And because he was the first, like we had Doug Williams win and Russell Wilson won, but those guys were kind of like, I'm a quarterback, I'm just not, doesn't have anything to do with my color, it's a quarterback, this is who I am. But Cam was just like,
embraced it.
Yeah. He was unapologetically black, like the Kendrick Lamar album. And he just, he was like, you're gonna deal with this.
Yeah. Color aside, the whole curtain separation thing.
Yeah.
How did the Super Bowl committee ever think that was a good idea?
Right.
You know you're going to have the winner on one side and a loser on the other, no matter what player was in that position.
Mm-hmm.
That is the last thing they want to hear while they're answering questions. They don't want to even respond to you in the first place.
Right.
It just creates an already uncomfortable situation more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. And I felt like I was defending Cam Newton and thinking to myself, A, why is this such a big deal in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people made it seem like he killed somebody. The reaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's put this into perspective. He lost the biggest game of his career.
Right.
He's pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
Can we just give the guy a break?
Well, it's just like, and everybody does this. Everybody posts those memes like, oh, when Aaron Rodgers celebrates, he does a discount double check. It's a thing. But when Cam Newton does it, it's a problem.
I almost felt like people were waiting for him to do something.
Oh, of course.
And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me whenever I watch the Panthers play, they seemed super laid back. They were having fun.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about Cam Newton as a college kid and how much maturation he's gone through throughout the years, he looks like a completely different person, even though he might not admit that, because I remember him saying something, some sort of a, like, I'm the same guy, I'm the same Cam, but he definitely has matured, and I think people were just waiting until he screwed up somehow, however you define screw up. But I'll defend Cam to my death.
All right.
At least in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Could he have stayed? Yes. But I think there's a double standard. People want you to be candid and be honest and be yourself, but then they already, they want you to play according to their rules and what they want you to do, should say. So you can't have it one way if it's another way. He was very forthright. He didn't want to be there, and he reacted to the situation, and he got up and left. I mean,
yeah.
Would you rather him had sit there and, complimented the Broncos and Peyton Manning and how he's such a legend and this and that if you didn't really mean it? I don't think I would have wanted to hear that, because you can tell it's not authentic. It's not genuine, so Cam was Cam.
Right, right. I mean, you brought up a good point, too, where it's like, what do you do? Like, I mean, they want you to play their game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's football, athletics in general, at least the major sports, the four majors in America, they're emotional games. And it's like they want to sanitize it. Like you can't do a backflip because you're hurting the other team's feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
football and everyone's worried about feelings,
it's
right?
It's such an emotional game. Like I'm trying to write about it I actually was working on it on stage, but it's such an emotional game and everybody's watching you. You do so much. You've been doing this thing since you were a kid, and when you're excellent at it and you want to celebrate, it's frowned upon. It's like the no fun league for a reason. And it just baffles me because like it just seems like it's a double standard.
I just didn't think it was that big of a deal.
Right.
For everyone in the universe to start critiquing Cam Newton's character because of it.
Well, it's funny how like the Charlotte Observer kept putting out those letters. The woman that was weirded out because Cam Newton was dancing while she's on this, while she can, her daughter can see cheerleaders dance and guys like ram into each other and everything like that. It's just so much. So much hypocrisy going on.
Yeah, I think if there are people who want to start problems and they want to make something a big deal when it's not a big deal. And I mean, that's just life, right? It's just.
Oh yeah,
it's stupid. There's no explanation for it.
I mean, the same thing happened with Ronda Rousey. How she was crass. She was very outspoken. She's very. She's not, you know. She wasn't somebody who was humble, and then when she got humbled, it was, you know, everybody was waiting for it. They were waiting to put the Jordan cry face on her, just like they were trying to do it with Cam. And so now that she cries on Ellen and says that she wants to kill herself, then now people want to accept her, you know? So
right. It's almost like you have to show that vulnerability in order for people to understand who you are.
Yeah.
Why? This is sports. It's a performance.
And
why
it's
do we have to? Yeah, it's entertainment. Why does everyone have to just throw everything out on the table? Why do we have to understand who you are as a person? We're not ever going to really, really understand that after a post-game press conference. But yet we still judge people based on the words that they speak during those, you know, precious minutes of the interview.
Why do you think people are so wrapped up into it? Like, why do you think, because you were touching on something before we started, to where people look at these athletes like heroes, and they're human, just like everybody else.
Right. Sorry, say that question again.
Well, they're human. Like, these guys are human. Why are they idolized? Why? I mean, because you looking at them, like, they are better than us in a way. They're at their top physical condition.
Yeah.
They're super talented. And they're good at this thing that not that many people are.
Right.
But they're also flawed.
It's all expectations. And I think they put these athletes at such high standards by all criteria. They want to check off all the boxes beyond their performance. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they're human. So what are we expecting out of them as far as character-wise? We don't know who they are when they go home, how they treat their families, what kind of friends they have. We might think we know based on what the media tells us or what, you know, is out there already. But yeah, what I was saying before we started, who are our heroes and why?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we put Peyton Manning on this pedestal or Cam Newton on this pedestal? Can't we just watch them play and enjoy it?
Yeah.
But we all do it. We're all guilty for it. I think some people take it a little too far, but yeah.
It's just like with college athletics, like, I think they should get paid. I know maybe you can't say anything too much about it, but I feel like whenever it comes around to, oh, these kids should get paid because there's millions of dollars being made off their back. And, no. They get scholarships. They get education where, you know, a couple years ago, the kid that got, who was the, from UConn, they won the NCAA champ, the Final Four.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, we're hungry and we can't eat or something, he said. God, what was that kid's name?
I forget which one you're talking
he played,
about.
He got drafted by the Heat, and I don't know if he's in the league anymore.
Oh, God. I'm drawing a blank.
But, like, they, when, you know, like, kids, they don't have good meal plans, but they're busting their ass, and then they're winning the championships, and people are like, they shouldn't get paid. They should, blah, blah, blah. I didn't have to. Like, well, you weren't good at basketball. Mm-hmm. You weren't good at a sport. Like, nobody's paying to watch you do science or chemistry.
Right.
This is what it is.
So I'm kind of torn because I don't think that every athlete is the same, and I think that they do have, or every athlete in person are the same, but I think they do have such an incredible opportunity to go to these prestigious universities, and maybe education isn't at the forefront of their priority. Maybe they are there just purely for athletics, but I went to the University of Texas, and I have sat next to a number of athletes who had headphones in their ears while the professor was lecturing.
Yeah.
And here I am, you know, I'm paying a tuition, and we're all taking the same, you know, we have the same homework, we're taking the same exam. I feel like we should all pay the same respect, at least during that hour and a half that we're sitting in that seat. So is there a sense of entitlement for people who are asking, like, to get paid for something that they're doing when they can't even, you know, they can't, if they show up to class, okay, but then when they're in class, they can't even handle those responsibilities, yet they're asking for more, and that's why I think I'm torn with that.
I don't think they're even asking sometimes. I think it's really, it's almost like it's just a means to an end. But speak on that entitlement, though. Like, I mean, you got a lot, like the Title IX situation with University of Tennessee. You got, like, all this other stuff that kind of, with stuff with Baylor, sexual harassment,
yeah,
rape.
Everywhere.
And all that's coming up now, and Peyton Manning's one of those. Now, I know you can't say if you think he did it or not, but just maybe speak to that entitlement, that other side of these athletes.
I think it all comes down to accountability, and there has to be an enforcer. If there's no one enforcing these guys, you know, if they're just letting them go, then it's going to keep happening, is it not?
Right.
It's a tale as old as time. It's the reason why it still exists, and I think entitlement doesn't just, it's not created from nothing. Someone is making you feel that you can get away with something, and you're not going to respect the system if you think you can just do whatever you want. Johnny Manziel is another name that really sticks out to me. And maybe, I don't know who followed him during, well, he Heisman Trophy winner, but and a really big deal when he played at Texas A&M. But from the stories that I heard since I went to Texas, you just kind of hear those things, and he was getting away with things from the time he was a freshman, and how is he supposed to, I mean, it makes a lot of sense why he does the things that he does today.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know, it's fascinating to me, but it's like, it's not surprising that they get away with it because they're so marketable. Like Jameis Winston, his situation at Florida, if there was something wrong, you blame him for doing the wrong thing. And then I also blame the Tallahassee Police Department, because he was a red shirt and they could have nipped it in the bud. We'd have never heard of him on that level, you know? So it's just kind of, and I'm hashtag black quarterbacks all day, but, you know, like, but you know, like, if that was an issue, they should have dealt with it, but they cover it up.
Yeah, and not to say that everyone who is accused of rape or harassment is guilty. That's not the case whatsoever. But I think it's recognizing a bad situation and not putting yourself in that situation. And that's where it starts. But also knowing that if you do cross a line, or you put yourself in what could potentially be a bad situation, there are consequences because there is someone who will hold you accountable. And right now, I just don't think it's consistent enough.
Because it's like the thing with Kesha, even in the music industry. Have you heard?
I've heard a little bit about Kesha's story.
It just seemed like, thank you. Are you getting another one?
I'll keep that, yeah. Thanks. Do not take away my focaccia bread.
They're trying to get us out of here. We've spent money, gosh darn it.
Right.
But it's like she's like stuck in her deal, like a record deal with Sony from the manager that like raped her and abused her. But she, I don't know the full details, but it just seems like she's trapped.
Yeah, and that's basically it. She can't create new music on her own, I guess. So, and she doesn't want to do anything new because then they'll profit off of it. That's my understanding. I have not read very far into it at all.
The listeners will fact check us if they there's an issue.
Per usual.
Actually, guys, I don't think that was the case. Yeah, so it was it's just a messed up.
Yeah. Is it ever gonna get better? Man, I don't know.
I hope so, because they just kind of ruined sports. Like, I was watching some channel, and there was some commercial that came on. I was in the kitchen, and there was a commercial about like, fathers and sons. Like, oh, he taught you how to hit the open receiver. He taught you how to hit a baseball. Did he tell you what else not to hit? Did he tell you what not to hit?
Yeah.
Like, not to hit a woman. It's like, oh, my God. It's just ruining. I'm trying to watch Steph Curry.
It's true. But I guess, hey, does it bring some sort of awareness to a conversation that has to happen?
Yeah.
Because now, as far as what we're talking about, maybe the conversation isn't coming up enough.
I think that's the case. I think now, though, I think you have, with social media, you have more voices. More voices can be heard through various platforms. More minority groups have the platform to speak, so you can hear more. Maybe it's just how I consume, but I guess mainstream America, it is something that needs to be discussed.
I believe so.
Yeah, but it's sometimes it's kind of jarring when you see those commercials. Like, whoa, okay, all right, I'm not gonna hit anybody.
Yeah, I guess the challenge is just figuring out how to introduce it to people to where we can recognize it's a problem and there needs to be a means to an end here because it's happening a lot. And I feel like now that social media is as strong and there's such a huge influence behind social media, it's only going to keep escalating the stories that we hear.
Now you make me think of, like, what is it like being a woman in sports, in the media, a woman in sports media? Because I notice, like, there's some women that I follow, they'll retweet, she'll say, oh, I don't think, she'll just make a statement, like, that most sports reporters or most sports personality would make, like, oh, I think the Chargers secondary is a little lax.
Oh, shut up, you're a woman. You don't
like,
know anything about sports.
Bitch, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And it's like, are you serious?
Yeah.
It's like people just, it's getting to the point where...
they don't give you a chance.
Yeah. It's like, maybe you just don't like women.
Yeah.
What, do you face any of that? What is it like for you?
Well, I'll start from square one. When I was first getting into the industry, or any audition that I've had up to this point, or anyone that I meet in this industry, really, the first question is always, so why sports? Mm-hmm. And I kind of look at them dazed and confused. What do you mean, why sports?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up playing sports. I grew up watching sports all the time. This is my life.
Yeah.
Why not sports?
And can I just note that Jenna is doing the air grab?
I'm Italian. I talk with my hands.
I love it. No, it's nothing wrong with that. I just wanted them to know how adamant and intense you were about this.
Yeah,
so go.
But I think it's a good point. Why are you asking me? I don't feel like that's the first question you would necessarily ask a man.
Sure.
You know, maybe it would, you get to the meat and potatoes of, you know, the job, not why sports. So broad as if, all right, I just, you know, picked this out of the hat. And or maybe they think it's trendy, or I saw Aaron Andrews. Is that the answer you're expecting me to say? Because you're never going to get that, at least not from me. So okay. I think that's just the first indication that there is this generalization that women are not really serious about the task, about sports. So, I don't know. You tell me. What does that say about our society and how people view women in the sports broadcasting industry?
I think it's just maybe it's a microcosm of a larger issue with how women are perceived in social stratification. But just being, since we're like just discussing this, mm-hmm. I want your perspective. I'm not a woman.
I know.
So I want to know like, you know, what it's like, because it's rare that I have the opportunity, that maybe my listeners have an opportunity to hear someone just speak mm-hmm. on it and just really see what it's like, because you're somebody that's on the rise. Like you're somebody that's gonna, you know, ascend to other mm-hmm. levels. So it's good to get to know what that's like on, you know, not from yeah. the ground floor, but you mm-hmm. you've been around. Like you were telling me, you've lived in 7 states.
Yeah, no, I started my first on-air job in Topeka, Kansas, and then 6 months later I ended up at NBC Sports, and I think it just depends. Hey, not everyone is out to get women in sports.
Sure.
There are plenty of people who are intelligent enough to listen and give someone the chance. But you're right, there's that troll on Twitter. I do a fantasy football segment that I host, and I speak with fantasy football analysts. And then all I remember was when that link was sent out, I had some guy respond, "You're a woman. I don't want to hear you giving advice on fantasy sports or football." But A, if you even watch the video, I wasn't the one giving advice.
You
I was the host.
Questions.
I was yeah. asking the questions.
Is that
so,
the Roto World?
Roto World, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, that just, case in point, that just shows you that they're not even listening. They don't want to. So, but yeah, not everyone is out to get me. And I really don't feel like every day I go to work, I don't feel insecure about being a woman. If anything, it keeps me on my toes and it holds me accountable for being careless. And that's something that's really important in journalism and reporting. And maybe it actually helps me, and it's to my advantage that I'm really careful about the homework and my research, and that's something I take really seriously. I spend hours and hours reading every single day, from the time I wake up to, you know, when I'm at work, and then before I go home and go to bed, I'm constantly reading. And I think that when I covered the Tour de France, like all these names and international riders, I had to get every name perfect. I did not want to be slightly off on any accent, because I felt like if a viewer saw this, they will eat me alive if I'm wrong. And maybe it's because I'm a woman and they wouldn't give me that second chance. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But I know that because there are people out there that feel that way, I do have to work harder.
Is it just like,
but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
It's yeah.
So you're aware of it, and then you just use that as a tool to
refine myself.
Refine
my skills.
Yeah.
I guess if there's any positive out of it. But yeah, are there sexists out there? Yeah, there are. But is it going to intimidate me or make me feel insecure? No, I just know that it exists, and someone's going to try to use it against mm-hmm. me. But
yeah.
What you have to do is...
Do you want to know? Do you want to know?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Would you like a coffee or coffee?
I'm fine. No, I don't want a coffee.
I'm good until I'm done with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Maybe she's ready to get rid of us. I don't know. We've dropped some major coin at Houston.
Yes,
and
I know.
And I think they should be aware of that.
But maybe they want us to drop some more coins. Maybe that's the thing.
Maybe I'll get another. It's my birthday, man. I'll get another drink.
Do it. They have some pretty... They have a nice dessert selection here.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know they had that.
So when Karen comes back around, we'll have to grab it.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Karen for a menu. Yeah, so she won't think we're...
So anyway, it exists. Is everyone out to get every female in sports broadcasting? No, but I think you do have to work harder because. And another example, I've made statements, just kind of general statements about a play or maybe an athlete that is pretty black and white. Mm-hmm. But if I see it, or my male colleague says it, it's taken more seriously if he says it.
And he's never played either.
No.
Yeah.
So, but again, I think it's also, it comes down to credibility and how long you've been in this industry for. And if you work hard and you're at it and you're not, you know, gone in a year, people, I think it's also about trust. And if they see your face and you do a really good job and you're consistent and you're growing, all of that builds in time. Maybe it takes a little bit longer, but that's just the way it is right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's true. I think being a minority is the same, too. Being a black dude, being a black person, you do have to work a lot harder or be better than your non-black peers.
Right.
And it's just a thing that you deal with. You can't let it get you down because there's things you want to achieve. And so you just keep going. You know that it's there, but you can't use it as a crutch.
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't seem like you're doing that either.
No, not at all. And you can, and especially in sports, there are so many names. You can easily just misspeak or mispronounce someone's name or, I don't know, switch up some mistakes.
Everybody does.
Everyone makes mistakes. But, as a woman, I feel like the first time someone is seeing me on camera, they go into judgment mode and, okay, let's see how much she really knows. A man... And I do it too. I mean, I'm just as guilty.
Because they're your competition in a way, right?
No. I think, actually, no matter who it is, I'm listening.
You're watching.
Very, very intently, and I'm listening to every single word. But I think that's also the responsibility of a viewer, and you want to be able to, you're rooting for the person on TV, but
because you
also want to know, all right, who has their shit together and who can I trust? And so forth. So that's it. If that answers your question,
it does. It's very. You covered all the bases on that. I think that's something that's important, especially using what can sometimes be an impediment, using that as a tool to refine yourself.
Yeah.
It's pretty profound, Jenna.
Oh, thank you very much. But I also know I never talk about it and I never make it a big deal. When I was at the Tour de France, I think there were like 4 female journalists out of 4,000.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very male dominated sport, as is football and, you know, professional basketball. Same with the mainstream American sports. We do see a lot more females now in this day and age, but in cycling, when I went out there, not only did I not know anyone, but I was one of the only female representatives out there. But I knew if I made it...
Can we see a dessert menu?
Yeah, sorry. No problem.
Oh, that's all right.
No, you're fine.
It's just a podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi. We have an apple on the cobbler, a blue ice cream, a hot wash sundae, a candy pecan, and a warm 5-milk brownie, also a blue ice cream.
Ooh. Are you going to get some?
You can always split something if you want.
The brownie with the ice cream?
That's good.
Let's do that.
No.
Okay.
No. We're strong.
Got it.
All right. Thank you. She's like, you motherfuckers, it's time to go.
Yeah. She got really excited when she heard that we wanted to order dessert.
More money.
Yeah. So again, I think that could initially be very intimidating when you're one of four females in a male-dominated atmosphere.
Sure.
But you can't make it a big deal. It's have the awareness that this is the way it is, but don't let it inhibit what you're trying to do. We all have the job to do, and you just have to overcome any insecurity that you might have going into that situation. So.
Cool. So you mentioned the Tour de France. I guess I want to put, frame the next question. What is it like? Because the last time you were on was 3 years ago.
Yes.
Almost 3 years. That's crazy. How time flies. You were about to go to Kansas, right?
Yep. No, I was, the last time we talked, I was about to do my internship at Fox 5 New York.
Okay, so yep. You were doing Fox 5 New York, and then you moved to Kansas?
Then I went to Kansas 5 months later. That was my first on-air job, yeah.
Talk about doing working in a small market, maybe lead with your internship, but okay. Then, like, I want you to just kind of talk about small market in Kansas, and then to NBC, and then to covering something, a major event like the Tour de France. What does all that entail?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, in the moment, and it's part of the process, you just kind of want to, everyone wants to get to the top, and everyone's in a rush to get there. So I think it was cool to see, to have that big market perspective and to learn from who I consider some of the best minds in sports broadcasting. After all, New York is the number one market. So you're going to have very experienced people in those positions. And then go to a market like Kansas where not only am I not from Kansas, so, I'm not one of them, but...
You're not in New York anymore.
Maybe 30,000 people are
That's
watching.
That's a bad joke. Sorry.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Toto.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I got you. I just dismissed it. Sorry.
like you should have.
I've only heard that reference like a million times.
Oh, you've heard it
times.
So many times?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I sound so... That's really corny. I try to be cutting edge and innovative. God, I'm horrible.
Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Yeah, so going to the smaller market, it was different. Now I see it as it was very necessary because you're going to make so many mistakes like we were talking about, and it's a lot better if you're making those mistakes in front of 30,000 people who are watching you instead of a million people who are watching you, and your career could start and end. In a week, you have to grow your legs, as they like to say. And I was super green. I had...
In what way? What ways?
Every way. You think you know so much about everything. Like, I watched sports in my entire life, but it's such a different... It's so different getting up there and having to deliver the news every single night, and you have to be consistent, and you have to, you can't... You have to be efficient, but you have to deliver it in a way where people understand what happens. It's just a lot harder than it seems, coming from like the couch perspective that everyone seems to have, including myself.
Right.
So, and then it's also, I wasn't an intern anymore. So when you finally get that first job, not everyone is willing to help you, like when you're receiving college credits at the internship. So those are also obstacles. You're going to get tested a whole lot. And you just have to navigate through it and figure it out. So those were, I only spent 6 months in Kansas, and it felt like 6 years. But.
Why?
Well, A, I was away from home. B, I don't know if I want to talk about B.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talk about what you want to talk about.
Yeah.
What do you want to reveal?
I would just say that growing pains is a good word. And you're going to meet certain people who want to help you and certain people that are going to try to get in your way and really intimidate you to the point where you really want to quit and go home and no longer want to pursue something that you've dreamed of doing. So I guess it's just real. It's a reality check. But also the biggest takeaway from those 6 months in Kansas, which weren't all terrible at all, I made a lot of mistakes and I learned so much, and even though I didn't feel like I was growing a whole lot. I really did, and I was able to take that experience and bring it to NBC Sports when I got that. And repetition in any job that you have is everything. So I can't discount, hey, I was in a 105 market. I mean, that it's a blessing. It's still, thank you. It's still the opportunity to get better and
progress. Because you're still covering major college teams.
I went to the NCAA tournament 2 months into being in Kansas. So, we were covering Kansas basketball, K-State, Wichita State. It was the year that all three of them went to the NCAA tournament. Yeah. It was really good. Wichita State was undefeated going into the NCAA tournament. So it was a great year. But, like I said, I mean, it's like the small market blues, especially now where sports are really dying in the small markets.
Really?
Small markets, local news, period. It's just budget thing. People are watching networks, national networks. So you really don't even get the support that I think that local news sports was getting even, 5-10 years ago.
That's interesting.
So you're dealing with.
I don't even think about that.
So you're dealing with just a number of things. But anyway, I see it as something that was very necessary in order to get to the next step. Because had I not gone out to Kansas, I would not have any opportunity to go to NBC Sports. Because I know of other hosts and talent that auditioned for this job that did not get it because they lacked certain experience.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Small market. I mean, it's true. Like, that's where you have to learn.
Yeah. And it's one of those things. Not everyone is willing to leave. Hey, I grew up in 5 miles outside of Manhattan. Unfortunately, it's the number one market in the United States. So that's not where I'm going to get my first job. And not everyone is so willing to move halfway across the country and do that sort of thing. But I think it teaches you a lot more lessons outside of, beyond sports broadcasting. It teaches you about yourself, what you're able to, overcome, your tolerance level, and all that in between. So
it's almost like you do have to leave to come back. To come back in almost any field.
And if you live outside of Topeka, Kansas, you might have to go 15 minutes for your first broadcasting job, which most of the reporters out there, they were all from that area. So it really wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. But for someone who was brought up 1,000 miles away, it's a completely different kind of experience.
Did they look at you like you were a city slicker?
No, I didn't really come in with that attitude.
Yeah, it didn't seem like you would be.
Yeah.
It didn't seem
guns
like
blazing. No.
Is that another corny? God. I normally hit with the good hard hitting jokes. Today.
Off your game.
I'm a little off my game.
It must be Karen.
It must be what?
Karen, our waitress.
No, I don't know. She's fine. She's nice.
Okay.
I think she just kind of wanted to get rid of us because she thought we weren't gonna. Sure. Spend any more money.
Let those jokes land. You got time. No.
I'm so much. When was the last time you saw me on stage? Probably like a long time ago.
3 years ago.
Probably like you and your brother came to piano.
Was that?
That might have been like 2011. I don't know. Who cares?
Anyway.
So you moved from Topeka back to New York, but to Stanford NBC.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing. So there was an opening for NBCSports.com digital host.
Okay.
What the heck does that mean?
What does that entail?
Well, that's what I wanted to know when my agent came to me. Like, what's this digital host? What does it mean? Because traditionally, most people got their start in local television. So it was actually to my advantage that this new platform came about, because at that time, even as the digital world has evolved tremendously since that. Even since then, a year and a half, people were kind of in between understanding it and not knowing what it was and not really trusting where it was going to go. So I remember a friend of mine who also got the notice about this audition, and she was like, nah, you know, I'm more traditional. I like, want to be on, you know, broadcast, sure. And that was the only way. But it was a platform that got me in the door.
Yeah.
And I just went a major national sports network.
Right.
And I was able to build up from there. And literally a year after I left, I covered one of the biggest events in sports.
Tour de France.
The Tour de France.
And we'll get to that in a second. But Isn't that how, that's how people consume things now anyway? Less people are watching TV.
Oh my God, it's crazy.
They're all using apps. They're like, millennials are, they don't watch TV.
Millennials. Oh, I hate that word.
I mean, that's what, I'm a millennial.
Okay.
I was just trying to be, see, God,
It's almost like we don't get it, the millennials.
That we don't get millennials?
Yeah.
I think we're both millennials.
No, we don't get the real world, us millennials. We do things so different.
But I think they drive the culture, though.
Well,
I think
yeah,
we do.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, kids that are younger than us,
yeah.
I mean, kids now, they yeah. have their iPad, they have their phone, everything they're watching.
They shape the world.
They
Absolutely.
Shape the world. They're looking at Netflix, they're downloading stuff, and it's a different time. My last guest that I had on, who's a filmmaker and a digital producer, Ali Muhammad, we were talking about how, like, to me, like, I miss, like, going to the store to buy a CD. Like, I remember, like, going to the store, being excited, picking it up.
Sam Goody.
Yep. The Wiz, Waxy Maxies, going to these places, opening up the CD, the smell of everything, and looking at it.
Taking the wrapper off.
Yeah, and it's so cold.
Yeah.
It's just like, and I miss that, but now kids are just like, boom, it's on my phone. It's here, and it's just, it's kind of, it's not baffling to me. I get it, but I feel like there's something missing. I guess I'm just more of a tactile person.
Oh, it's all instant gratification. There's
right.
no buildup. There's no excitement.
So, like, when you have an album come out, like Kanye West's album, that's one of the few events, like, that's an event, you know, that normally it's not associated with much. I mean, that, like, I'm a nerd about indie artists or, like, people that I like that I'm excited about, but it's not something, like, that Twitter's going to be talking about for, like, a couple weeks.
Right. And now everything leaks. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's not much to be desired anymore.
So they're shaping it, and then you're a part of that. Like you're a part of that because they can easily see you. They're like, oh, let's see what Jenna Corrado has to say about fantasy football or Tour de France. So talk about.
Well, I was gonna say, and when I was in college, I was a cable cutter. I dropped my TV plan and all that.
Okay,
so.
Let's talk. Now, see, now you went into a passageway that I'm interested in. How did you do that?
What do you mean?
Because I just renewed. I was talking about this before.
You want advice?
I have Fios. It's so expensive.
It is. It's crazy.
And cable in general is super expensive. But I feel like I'm going to be missing out because if I get rid of Fios and I get rid of all, like, my movies and my TV shows that I want to see. Like, what did you do?
Okay,
you're
still going to have, if you have Fios Internet, and I don't really know the plan all that well, but if you still have an account, you can log on to your system, and you can still watch your TV shows, but either live, it just kind of depends.
Yeah.
You can stream it, or you can watch it a day later. You're going to miss some things. You can't see everything. Not everything is available, but at least, the stuff, I mean, this is going back from college, but I felt like if I can just stream, I have the internet, I don't need to pay $100 a month for cable.
Yeah.
I was a cable cutter, and I was a digital host. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Tour de France,
let's do it.
Biggest sporting event in all. How do you say in the world?
I would say it's the biggest internationally. It's right. Biggest annual sporting event in the world, because okay. The Olympics is, you know, every 2 years, summer, winter, so and the Super Bowl is for NBC, you know, the three major networks, they rotate, so NBC is only going to get it once every 3 years, but worldly it is the biggest international sporting event annually.
Talk about what getting that job is like. Getting the job, and then how do you mentally prepare, and how do you physically prepare for something like that?
Okay, so when I came into this, I had the blinders on. I grew up 5 miles from Meadowlands, the Meadowlands, the Jets, the Giants, the Devils, the Nets at the time. Mm-hmm. So I grew up.
Pause for a second.
What?
Do you think? I think Christy fucked up by letting the Nets go. No, you can't say anything.
No, I.
It sucks a little bit.
I mean, I'm pro Meadowlands, and I kind of miss it.
Yeah.
Now they're the Brooklyn Nets, and the hipsters can care less.
They don't care.
Hipsters in Brooklyn can care less about.
I went to a Warriors game when they played the Warriors, and you should have seen all the fresh Steph Curry jerseys there, because everybody was there to see the Warriors. They weren't there to see like Joe Johnson. They don't care. That ski mask all-star. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's weird. I don't think people care. They just go to see, the visiting team. Okay, pro Meadowlands, go. I'm sorry.
Anyway.
You just made me.
I'm sorry. The Nets put me to sleep.
No, they're terrible.
Hold on. Let me chew my brownie.
Okay, which is a really good brownie.
I know. Told you.
My God, Karen.
Karen. So I grew up watching football, basketball, Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, 15 minutes away. So baseball. So I had all my blinders going into this thinking, I'm not covering any crazy non-mainstream sport. This is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to NBC, and obviously they're renowned for the Olympics. They have Sunday Night Football, but the shows that they have, or the properties that they do, Sunday Night Football, they have it once a week. And they do it really well. They win Emmy for it every single year, but it's not like ESPN where they have 30 college football games, or Fox or CBS that have a number of NFL games mm-hmm. every weekend. So they don't cover NBA. You know, they don't broadcast NBA. They don't have the rights for MLB.
They were so good when they covered it, though.
So,
oh my God, sorry.
It's okay. So,
loved it.
So,
sorry.
So, of course, the sports that I wanted to cover, well, I'm at the wrong place, if that's what I really have my heart set on. So I had a conversation with one of the executives, and he said, you know, we were talking about how I can stay within the NBC family after my digital contract expires, and he said, if you are open-minded and you're willing to take on sports that you're not that familiar with, but you're willing to learn, you're going to have way more opportunities, you're going to be more marketable, and it says something about who you are and what your potential is if you can be thrown in these uncomfortable situations and, you know, come out with your head above water.
That's how you grow. That's the only way you grow.
You have to. And it was the most, it was one of the most valuable conversations I've ever had. And I think about it all the time. So a week later, that same man he called me to his office and he said, so what do you know about cycling? And I don't know. I guess I laughed and I don't think I said anything. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I can't really remember. I just kind of, I didn't know where this was going. And he said, we need a reporter for the Tour de France. And I just said, yes. And that was it. And he's like, you'll do it? I just said yes. And then I walked out of his office, and I'm like, what the fuck did I just get myself into?
Yeah. I've had those before.
Cycling is, this is not Italy. This is not Europe. So other than, outside of Lance Armstrong, what does the average American really know about cycling? So I had to really figure this out, and I had only, I was assigned to this event 3 months. I had 3 months to learn cycling and then also be able to cover it.
So are you saying that wasn't enough time?
Well, I did it.
I know you did it, but did you think, like, is that enough going in, maybe?
I always feel like I can never be, I can always know more.
Mm-hmm.
Do I feel prepared enough to feel good and to feel confident? Yeah, I can get to that point, but I always feel like I could use more time. I never feel like, oh, I'm completely comfortable. There's always something more that you can learn. So it was, I just threw myself into it. There was no other way. I can't come out of this looking like an asshole. But seriously.
No, yeah.
But I also had the mindset as, everyone knows that I'm new to this sport. I'm going to use that to my advantage. So I worked with the live producer and my field producer almost every single day, picking their brains about the sport that they knew very well. When I got to the tour, a number of former cyclists were now analysts for us. So I just...
Like who?
Bob Roll, who was on the first American team at the Tour de France. Jens Vogt, who's a cycling legend. He rode in 17 Tour de Frances. And Christian Vandeveld, who rode for U.S. Postal with Lance Armstrong.
Okay.
So I was just with them every single day, asking them questions. And had I gone in there thinking, like, I know my stuff. Like, I know what I'm doing.
Sure.
I don't think I would have ever made it out alive. Because cycling fans are so hardcore and passionate. And they hang on to every single word. I knew that... Hey, like you said, everyone makes mistakes, but I really have to put in 100% effort. I have to go full gas in as far as my commitment goes. Because if you do make a mistake, at least, you know, you care and you're trying and people respect that. So, but I'm also getting the advice from, you know, these world-class former athletes of the sport that people... listen to you and respect very much. So I used it all to my advantage, and that's kind of how I went about it. But yeah, I mean, I read books and biographies and watched documentaries, and I was just reading every article and any kind of material I can get. And cycling is, it's really hard. There's so many intricate details to this sport. People think it's an individual sport. It's not. It's a team sport. And there are many different roles and responsibilities of every single rider. And, I mean, all these teams are 198 riders at the tour that start the Tour de France. And they're not all American, and they don't have all, you know, they're not Bob Jones either. So there's a lot, a huge learning curve. And, you know, one stage can be 4 hours, but it seems like in the last 2 kilometers, everything goes so fast, and you have to be so well equipped and prepared and ready to go, because you have to make those split second decisions, and it's like, it is the Super Bowl meets the circus.
Are you covering it live?
I'm part of the live broadcast, yeah. Okay. Oh no, I'm not just there before and after the race and packaging stuff together. No, we are covering the live broadcast.
So it's like, Winthrop Abingale is riding down, blah, blah. Jenna, what do you think? Or what is
no,
it like
well,
that?
I'm not, I'm the reporter, I'm not the analyst.
So they just go to, they're like,
so,
Jenna, boom.
So I was doing all the start line interviews and the finish line interviews.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but again, like, it's crazy. I think they said among all the reporters, journalists, whatever, about 4,000 of us. It was, and I've never seen a scene like it, and this was every single stage, all 21 stages.
You've been to the Super Bowl, you've been to
NCAA tournament. NCAA. There is nothing that compares to the Tour de France. Nothing.
How do you keep your, like, your head?
I think you just kind of go into this mode where you have to focus. Otherwise, you will lose your cool so fast. Mm-hmm. You have to. You have to be prepared with your questions, and you have to be ready to go at all times. And I think as long as you stick to those, you know, those core values, everyone cracks, but you won't lose your cool every single day. Because then when you start forgetting what you want to say and what you're going to ask, that's when you start losing, you start kind of losing it a little bit.
And how long is that process? How long is that whole...
3 weeks. So it's 21 stages over 23 days, and we really didn't get a day off because our first rest day was after stage 9, and we had to drive 6 hours to the next city on our first rest day, so I don't really count that as a day off. Mm-hmm. And then our second rest day, which was about 6 days later, we were doing sit-down interviews. So we were full gas the entire time. And you start going delusional. And that's the other thing about being prepared and just knowing your stuff, because when you're tired and you're driving, and we have to find the start line, then we do our interviews, then we have to race to the finish line. We're driving ourselves, too. Mind you, we're in France, so we're getting lost. Like, it's not easy to find where you're going or pull over, ask questions. Not everyone knows English.
Do you have an interpreter with you at all? Or?
Yeah, at times, but not in our car.
Okay.
So there's just, like, a lot of obstacles way beyond the event itself that contribute to the challenge of covering the tour. Actually, our coordinating producer, Dave Michaels, he's the brother of Al Michaels of Sunday Night Football.
Yeah.
He's covered the Olympics. He's covered everything, every major property of NBC, and he's covered cycling for the past 30 years, and he said he's still figuring out how to cover the Tour de France because there are so many moving parts. It's like anything else.
So you're probably going to go back?
Well, right now I'm kind of in the midst of starting the negotiations,
sure.
But I would love to go back. That's the other thing.
So you came out on the other end
and you want
to do it again?
So yeah, so that's the thing. I guess there are two ways of looking at it. I mean, you either do it and you hate it and there's nothing that you like about it and you never want to go back, but then there's also beauty in the chaos.
Sure.
Beyond the difficulty of the day-to-day grind and everything that goes into it, it's so beautiful. I mean, I'm in the middle of the sport itself. I absolutely have grown to love. I fell in love with cycling. When I came back from the tour, it was the start of football season, and I didn't even want to talk about football.
Like, wow.
Yeah. The relationships that you build throughout those 3 weeks, you're with the same people every day. The teams, you know, you go in, no one knew me. It was the first time they saw my face, and I'm talking about a sport I didn't know much about at the time, but, they were patient with me, and they really gave me a chance, and I think they saw how I showed up every day, ready to go. I was well researched, and the rapport kind of built from there, and I was so sad to leave. You kind of like hit the dog days of the tour where you feel like you're going backwards and you're gonna end up at stage one again, but then that last week flies by and you're so sad that it's over.
So everything else is kind of like a cakewalk almost. You're still, there are challenges, but nothing really compares.
It's not as crazy, but yeah. I mean, again, I felt like I was a new cast member of Survivor. Like, they threw me out into the wild, and I just had to figure it all out.
Man.
Because the people that I worked with out there, they were doing it for, like, I mean, my photographer was, I think it was, like, his 17th Tour de France. So
okay.
He's seen everything. He's done everything. And you're not on your own. There, I got so much support, but with certain things, I felt like this is the first time I'm experiencing it, and I really had to figure it out. And I felt like I went through every single emotion. I had my highs, I had my lows, and like I said before,
what were some of those lows like?
Maybe just like missing something in the interview, or again, yeah, missing something in the interview, or getting lost. The car dying, and it's like you just had a long day and you have to drive another 2 hours. Those are all lows because you're so tired. There's no AC. You know you're not going to get a good night's sleep. I think I was averaging 4 hours of sleep every night because I was struggling to sleep. So it takes a toll on you. I think you just, yeah, you hit a certain point where you can either sink or swim.
You're pretty much battle tested.
Yeah, and the last week when you learn things, and that's why I said survivor, because it was so hot in southern France, and I was going into that third week, I was averaging about 4 hours of a night, and I'm like, okay, I will not make it to stage 21 if I don't do something about it. So I started taking towels and throwing them into cold water and wrapping myself in it just to go to bed. And I slept like a baby. I slept like 7 hours that night, that whole last week. But those are the kind of things that get you, you know, you re-energize and ready to go the next day so you can just do your job. Because every day it's not always the job, it's everything else. So.
Oh, yeah.
And then once you're cranky, hey, I'm not the only one that got cranky. You know, tempers flare and that industry, everyone is opinionated. You have to work with people. So you have all of these outside factors going on, and you have to put on this major production, and you have to make it seem like we're this well-oiled machine to the people at home that are watching it, because they're not going to get it.
Just like a family.
Just like a family.
Well, Jenna, thank you for hanging out with me. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, take it easy. Ooh, that was good.